There it is. Oh, the theme song to Banana Lounge Broadcasting. We are the two Tonys. Thank you, Michelle, for introducing us and for providing a great 3 hours radio. Big news breaking during Michelle's show. The dream of any radio broadcaster is to have something happen during the show, and it happened today. Tony Abbott being elected leader of the Liberal Party.
Yes.
Tony Martin. How do you feel about one of our fellow Tonys getting to those lofty heights?
I think it's good to see the Liberal Party returning to its roots and having a truly hateable person in the top job, because it wasn't working with Malcolm Turnbull. I mean, he was a monstrous ego, a pompous twat. I think we'll all agree on that. But he did seem to think...
He had a soul.
He seemed to think that climate change might be real. And it's good to see, you know, now with a vile misogynist back in the top job, we can sort of get back to booing and hissing.
That's right.
The way we love to.
It will be easier to editorialise than it has been in recent months. What did you think about them all visiting John Howard on the weekend on how to deal with leadership? Wasn't he the guy who didn't resign for 2 years too long? Apparently, he did. He'd never been a Malcolm Turnbull fan, obviously.
No.
And Malcolm's gone and he said to him, you should do the right thing by the party. Don't just think of your own selfish interests and march on blindly with your leadership. Think of the party. I can't believe he could sit there straight-backed in his 1950s-style rose print armchair and say that to Malcolm, given what he did.
What was he serving up, do you think? What snacks would have been on the coffee table?
I think, again, he would have had the floral print cutlery, but the fine china, where it's quite thin to feel, and you can't fit your entire finger into the holder.
No.
It's a bit cramped in there, so you have to kind of perch.
Devils on horseback, you think, for everybody?
What's that?
I'm not sure. That's an Australian thing that somebody is, I'm told, having lived here for, you know, over half my life, I've still not experienced devils on horseback. People love mentioning it to me. It's some kind of hot suggestion.
So that's a, is that a food, are you saying? Is that what you would have served up?
Have the phones lit up?
No. Devils on horseback. It's interesting, isn't it, that it sometimes takes a newcomer to the country to introduce you to your own expressions.
That's right. Yeah, well, I'm just...
Well, you're a newcomer. You've been here 26 years.
I think so. Something like that. Joe Hockey, there was great photos of you. I just think Joe Hockey would... I know he's popular. People sort of like him.
Yeah.
But don't you think he'd be more popular if he just started wearing a Fred Flintstone costume everywhere he went? If he just wore it one day and didn't refer to it, refused to answer questions about it, and just stuck with it, I reckon people would go with it.
So, you know, if he had have won, it would have been the Sunrise team from 3 years ago or five years ago in the two top jobs. And that starts to demand that whoever was the host of Sunrise, is it Koshy or Koshy?
Koshy becomes Speaker of the House.
He becomes Speaker of the House.
Good idea.
If it's going to feel exactly like a Sunrise panel, Parliament, then let's get that, have two speakers, a guy and a girl, both big smilers, and, you know, organise trips to Kokoda every second week for the entire Parliament.
Maybe throw to Karen Morgold with astrology. Is she dead? That's a very old reference.
I'm not sure.
I haven't seen Mel and Koshy for a long time.
Give you some hard politics.
Yeah, please do. I've got us onto devils on horseback.
Fran Bailey.
Oh, yeah. Now, what happened? Was she...
sick. So she's sick. The vote for people who missed it, 42-41.
Wow.
I think the initial vote was Tony Abbott picked up 30-odd, 35.
Right.
Then Turnbull, 26, and Hockey, 23. Out, Hockey. You lose for least. Then they do a runoff between in the second round, and it was 42-41. That means that, of course, one vote changes it. Fran Bailey... sick.
And she you can't have a postal?
Well, she tried to have a proxy vote, but party rules don't allow it. She had an MRI on Saturday and apparently is quite seriously ill.
Right.
Like myself, as you can hear.
What's going on there?
Cough. So she's thrown in the legitimate sickie, but trouble, really. She could have changed Australian political history had she not got sick.
That's perfect, though, for Tony Abbott taking over, because he hates women and their health issues. We know that. He's run on that. That's been his platform for years. Obviously, they're not hoping to get any women to vote.
No.
Do you know any women who like Tony Abbott? Have you ever met one?
No. What do you think? Do you think... the Labor Party should introduce the policy of removing GST on tampons just to provoke.
Let's do it. Let's see what happens. Throw it in there.
Oh, we've had a tough morning this morning because even though I tried to watch this unfold at my house, but that upset our general schedule of in the night garden into play school. And it's been a Wilson Tucky style tantrum thrown by the 2-year-old because she had to watch Anthony Green instead of the little Tombly Boos.
I called you up and you said that you've got, like, it's not enough that you have to watch play school. You've got,
they're on tape as well.
Tapes, videotapes, old style.
Yeah. Oh, no, I've got one of those disc recorders.
Mm.
So I record it onto disc. We watch play school, I mean, far too many episodes. I know that almost all the episodes. I see the repeats come around. I reckon I've seen 3/4 of the episodes.
And how do they go back as far as when there was a gollywog in the cast?
No, they're still working. They're working 2003 and beyond.
Right.
I know if it's a recent one because Justine's pregnant.
Oh, okay. Oh, Justine, hang on. Devil's on Horseback, Prunes, De-pitted, with bacon wrapped around the outside, toothpick through the middle.
Ah, now
thank
I'm
you
with
very
it.
Who do
that's
we have
Susie
to
Morris Ashton, who does the
thank
cooking
you,
segment diet schmiet on the breakfast. Right. She will be impressed by the amount of bacon in that recipe.
We're suggesting that's what John Howard was serving up on Sunday
with a few of those TikToks, maybe.
Right.
The biscuits with the icing on the back and the thyme.
Does that, you mentioned a name before, does that lead us to our first track?
Yeah, Anthony Green, the election analyst on ABC. I thought, as I was watching him and being abused for watching him instead of Justine Clark, here is Casey Bonetto's tribute to Anthony Green from Keating a few years ago. And you have to imagine what's the Conan O'Brien style moving mouth effect on pictures of the 7:30 report cast. We're back.
We
decided that we should pre-announce the next song because Anthony Green was really just linking into the current events
of
9:30 this morning. And it could have been Tony Abbott there at the end proclaiming victory with his 42-41 vote. It was actually meant to be Keating from the musical Keating, Casey Bonetto there with the song. But we wanted to talk about Dave Graney Elizabeth McCarthy.
Of course, normally sitting in these chairs with BLB, but I'm not sure. I think Dave's on tour.
I think he is.
I think Elizabeth's on tour.
I think spiritually she is. She doesn't do the show without him.
No. In order to have some kind of thematic link, I've dug out an old track of Dave's. This is from the album Hashish and Liquor. And I'd like to say that it perhaps applies to Malcolm Turnbull, but I don't think Dave would like that.
Contemporising his timeless songs.
No. So here we go with Mr. Bad Luck. Yes, good evening, good afternoon. It's Tony Martin and Tony Wilson filling in for Dave Graney and Elizabeth. Here on Triple R, we just heard Dave Graney there with Mr. Bad Luck from Hashish, part of the Hashish and Liquor set. Tony, isn't it good to be back on the R's?
It's an absolute pleasure. I knew I was back, not just from the fact that I spent 6 years sitting just about in this chair, but when you heard the sponsorship announcement just there, the C-bomb thrown in
there
the background of Jarvis Cocker, C's are still running the world. I mean, I think it's great that you can play that track on Triple R, but we're not content to do that. When we're promoting the artist in a 10-second bite, that's the bit we choose to play.
Get it in there, because we did some filling in on the ABC recently.
Yes.
Wasn't that interesting?
Interesting. You learn some rules. It was the best part about it was learning at the time they dropped the rule on us. One of the rules is that you don't, as an announcer on the ABC, provide opinion.
That's right. You couldn't say that Malcolm Turnbull is a pompous twat, as I did earlier.
No.
You could say people have suggested that he is.
Yeah.
Or in certain quarters he is regarded as.
What do you think?
Or you could get someone in. You could get Kath Devney to come in and say it, you know, till the cows come home. But the host himself must remain neutral.
And we were 6 minutes from going to air when they said, oh, just no product announcements. And that was one that we knew and expected on the ABC.
Yeah.
But then, oh, and also, no opinions.
No opinions. But product announcements is interesting because there's a point where a word gets into the dictionary, isn't it? What's the proper phrase for that? When a word, say Google, ceases to be a brand name and becomes Is it an adjective? No, I should know this.
It becomes a noun.
A noun, pardon me. You know, so you say, I'm going to Google that. You can't say that.
Verb.
Well, that's a verb. A couple of, welcome
but Google
to,
is both a noun and a verb.
Welcome to Author's Corner. But the yeah, so there is a moment when that happens, but on the ABC, you're not really supposed to say, I'll Google that. You're supposed to say, I'll type that into
my search engine.
Into a generic search engine or YouTube.
I like to say, I'll dogpile that.
What does that mean?
One of the crap search engines.
Oh, one of the crap search engines.
Fallen by the wayside.
Gone the way of Alta Vista.
Alta Vista. What about Web Wombat?
Web Wombat.
Is that still kicking?
I'm not sure if that's still going. How many things could you look up?
Just Australian things, I think.
Just Australian stuff. But and then there were interesting ones like Kindle, because we were talking about books and whether people will...
Yeah.
Eventually stop having paper in their house and just and I think I said the word Kindle on air and the screen in front of us exploded with someone saying, please use the phrase electronic reading device.
It's very pithy, isn't it?
But here on the R's, we can say Kindle, Google and YouTube till the cows come home and drop the C-bomb in a promo. Fantastic. Are we talking politics still? Is that what we're doing?
I can't remember what we're talking about.
You were looking at, you've brought in some CDs, and I notice you've got the Best of the Smiths over there, Tony, and you didn't know who was on the cover.
No, I've always just thought it's an old guy the Smiths found, and dug him up, and he had an interesting face. He does have a very interesting face. It's a good photo.
That man is Charles Hawtrey from the Carry On movies, the one with the glasses.
So I've never seen a Carry On.
Never seen. Well, I guess you wouldn't be old enough to have remembered them in cinemas.
I saw 3 minutes of a Carry On film and got the feel of them, very large, buxom, blonde British ladies.
And then another bloke with a face like a devil's on horseback.
So that's Sid James.
Sid James just going. Every time a woman walks into the room, often unprompted.
Yeah. And every joke almost is a sexual entendre.
That's right.
Or a toilet entendre.
Or accompanied by, usually there'll be a cut, so the joke will happen, and then they'll cut to Sid James going, but then they'll cut to Kenneth Williams, the gay one, just going, no.
Right.
And the trick was to see how long he could stretch the... sort of like in The Wire when Clay Davis could stretch a... Shit. I'd like to see them together. I'd like to see Clay Davis... Shit. And Kenneth Williams... in a stretch-off.
Of their catchphrases. Of their noise phrases more than... They're not even phrases.
No,
their catch noises.
I love it when someone's catchphrase is a noise because years ago I met John LeMond, the Australian auteur behind such films as Pacific Banana.
Yeah.
And A Slice of Life, the very obscure vasectomy gone wrong comedy. And he claimed to me that he had... invented the phrase "quaw."
That's not true.
And he can be seen saying it. John LeMond himself, the director, in an uncredited appearance in Alvin Purple, in the first Alvin Purple movie, when Alvin is in court for nudity, I think, probably something like that. And Noel Ferrier is the judge and demands that we see evidence of Alvin Purple's transgressions, and they screen. A beautifully shot.
I'm not good. Montage.
It's never explained where the camera was, how they've obtained this footage, which is identical to the footage in the film we're watching.
Yeah.
It's screened in the courtroom, and they cut to the courtroom projectionist, and it is indeed John LeMond, and he goes, "Quaw."
So there is another noise phrase.
But he tried to tell me that was him, but that's like, Alvin Purple's like 70, is it 74, 72? But I remember as a kid, Jack on the buses going, "Quaw," at every opportunity, well before Alvin Purple.
It's a huge claim. So we're calling them catch noises because they're not really phrases. They're short.
Are you suggesting people call in?
No, people should. Over there, we're going to have a few attempts to compile lists, and if any of them take off, we'll run with them.
Yeah, but okay.
Catch noises. Who has a catch noise? So who have we got so far?
Kenneth Williams with...
Okay. From the Carry On movies.
Clay Davis, that's a word, really, but he turns it into a sound on The Wire with shee.
That's true. Clay Davis has a name similar to the former Californian governor, Gray Davis.
Oh, really?
Who Arnie sullied and won a very dirty victory that's subsequently Arnie's become a bit of a hero. But Gray Davis, geez, he was hardly done by.
Wouldn't you like to see Governor Schwarzenegger go up against Governor Jesse Ventura?
Oh, absolutely.
And restage Predator, basically.
Hey, how would you like to go into an election against Arnie, who's arguably the most colourful political candidate that's ever existed?
Sure.
Because he's been in Predator and he's been in...
A collateral damage.
All those things give him a lot of colour. And your name is Grey.
That's right.
Your name is Grey and you look like an accountant.
And not enough letters.
He got smashed to kingdom come.
He did.
So we've got two. We've got Clay Davies, is it?
Davis. And we've got Bob Grant. Let's give him the authorship of Quaw, Bob Grant from Quaw, On the Buses.
And we've also...
Jack from On the Buses.
Okay. And we've got some callers. I think
already?
We have got callers.
Are they saying get back onto politics?
No,
what the hell are you talking
be.
About?
Let's see if they've got, if they've got some catch noises.
Okay, give it a go.
Hello, are you ringing up with a catch noise?
I am.
Yeah?
Who have you got for the list?
I've got Skippy.
Oh, Skippy, of course. Skippy. Would you do it for us? You might as well.
All right.
There we are. Very good.
Yeah. I always thought they should have just, for 1 week, replaced the ticking clock on 60 Minutes with Skiffy. Would anyone have noticed?
I don't think so. Hello. We're collecting catch noises. Have you got one?
Me?
Yeah? No?
Yeah. Homer.
Homer. Has
Dole.
Dole. And how's that spelled? That's D...
O-H, I believe.
Is there an apostrophe in there somewhere?
I think there would be.
D apostrophe O-H.
Well,
I think.
The Simpsons are going to throw up a few, aren't they?
That's
There's
right.
also Nelson from The Simpsons. Thank you
What's
for that
his? What's Nelson's? Oh, the ha-ha. That's very good. Sorry about that, madam.
Hello. We're looking for that person might have had Nelson. Have you got a catch noise for us, or are you ringing up to speak to reception?
I have. Adrian Edmondson from Bottom. It was
Ooh-er. That's right. And was it... I could never remember. Was it Adrian Edmondson or Rick in The Young Ones who sort of did... That was Adrian Edmondson.
Yeah.
So you've got a few from him. The phones have really run hot on catch noises. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
Hello, have you got another catch noise?
Yeah. Arj Barker does Booyah. That's not really a word, is it?
I think we can add that to the list.
Booyah's excellent.
That's
in fact,
very
I've
good.
Got that.
I don't think Arj Barker's responsible for inventing that. I'm not sure.
No, I guess we'll accept people who have popularised it rather than... Because I don't think that even Bob Grant, the late Bob Grant, would suggest that he invented Quaw. I'm sure it's probably in Shakespeare somewhere.
I think you're right, actually. The other one I've got... is Brad Pitt's character in California.
Oh, yeah, with a K. What was his catchphrase?
Oh,
right.
The throat clear.
That hurt.
Yeah, I can tell.
The threatening throat clear. He was a dirty man in that film.
Nasal grunt.
Nasal grunt, add it to the list. Thank you, sir.
Welcome.
Excellent. It's only a matter of time until we get a track inquiry here, Tone. But hello. Have you got a catch noise for us?
Yes, I do. You remember Hannibal Lecter, the I ate his liver.
That sounded more like my Labrador.
It was a pant.
When it spots a crouton, but we know the one you mean, that sort of lip noise. I think Tony Abbott does that one too. I've seen him do it.
I want to see Abbott in the mask after the next election.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Thank you for that catch noise. Have you got one? Have you got a catch noise? Hello?
Caller.
Hello.
Hello. Who are you and what is your catch noise?
My name's Ed and my catch noise is Jay and Silent Bob. They got bung.
Oh, right.
Bung.
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 Excellent.
Jay and Silent... Did you like... when was the last time we saw Jay and Silent Bob?
Probably 2 weeks ago.
Just down the corner. Were they in the last... What was his last film? Were they in that?
Dogma, I think.
Dogma. No, there's been a few since then. It was Jay and Silent...
Yeah, it has.
It's Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. Were they in Clerks? They would have been in Clerks too, obviously.
Yeah, they're in that.
What about that adoption one?
Which sure. One?
There was one with Ben Affleck.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I don't know if I've seen that one.
I think they were too embarrassed to front.
Let's take two more catch noises. Thank you very much for that contribution.
Thank you.
Hello, have you got a catch noise?
Yes, I do. Tim Allen in Home Improvement.
What was his?
Oh.
Oh, right. I never saw...
In the, saw what was that. It? The Hungry Parent? What was the name of Tim Allen's show?
Home Improvement.
Home Improvement. Angry Parent. The Joe Hockey story. Then what's... And have you got another one for us?
No, that was it.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry to put the pressure on.
That's very good. And our final call, I tell you, it's a Christmas tree, the telephone here. Catch noises are the talk of the town. Hello, have you got a catch noise for us?
I certainly do. I've got a couple. I've got Muttley in Wacky Races.
Oh, yes. Do it for us.
Jeez, it does well over the 24-bit reception of the phone.
That sounded like a whole of shopping trolleys crashing into each other. And your other one?
I had another one, but I've forgotten it.
Maybe you could just do Muttley in Dastardly and Muttley in their flying machines. How did that go? Very good. Two Excellent. For one. Beautiful. Is it time for some music, Tony?
I think it is time for some music.
You've been talking, you just said talk of the town, so let's have some more music from here in Melbourne. This is Darren Sylvester with That's a Nice Haircut. There you go. That's Flight of the Conchords from their new album, I Told You I Was Freaky, with Carol Brown. I don't think Arch Barker was... He might have been on backing vocals. I'm not sure. I'm trying to establish some kind of link.
He was certainly the voice promo between the songs.
He certainly was.
With his booyah catch noise. Mm. We collected them. Thank you to the listeners who contributed here on 93881027. We've now got a very fulsome list of catch noises that I've tossed over my shoulder and thrown in the bin.
And let's just see if we can slip them into the show without anyone noticing. As the hour continues, Tony Martin and Tony Wilson filling in for Dave and Elizabeth. Dave, Mick James just ran in here and told us that Dave is supporting Glen Campbell. Can that be right?
Glen Campbell... Is he a sort of a Sinatra-style crooner?
He was an old man when I was a kid. So not really, no, I wouldn't say Sinatra-style. On the cusp of country and western.
Okay.
The Rhinestone Cowboy, that was his big hit.
Okay.
I can't remember the others. By the time I get to something, I'll be something. I think that was him.
So
I'm not sure.
He's kind of a... Is he a sort of a Ray's Midday Show type regular?
That'd be... I think that'd be on the money. I can feel people somehow being offended out there by this discussion.
I immediately thought of Greg Campbell, who played two tests in 1989 or 1987.
Mm. Really?
Yeah, in what, for Australia.
Some sort of game? Sport?
Cricket.
Cricket?
Because when you were mocking me for the Smiths cover before for not knowing the guy from...
Charles Hawtrey
from the Carry On films, I wondered how far down... The pecking order of most famous Australian cricketers.
Oh, right, okay.
Until you draw a blank.
Okay, I know who Warnie is.
Yeah, Warnie's gone.
I know the one from the Carpet Call ad. Who was that?
Dennis Lilly.
Was Alan Border a cricketer?
Yes. Good one. Captain Grumpy.
Who? What?
He called himself.
He called himself.
He got called Captain Grumpy.
Captain Grumpy.
He didn't anoint himself. I shall be called Captain Grumpy.
The ones who are on the 12th Man records?
So they're the commentators, Bill Lowry,
right,
and
but they
Tony.
Must have been cricketers.
They did all, yeah. But of the current team, if I said, you know Ricky Ponting,
I do because he bears an uncanny resemblance to Matt Tilley,
really
of Gotcha Call fame. that's and I look for I live on spotting lookalikes.
So he would be the most famous Australian left in the side. If I go to the second most famous, it's probably Michael Clarke.
Right. Wasn't he the guy, the giant black man from the Green Mile?
Is that right?
Oh, it's Michael Clarke Duncan. Pardon me.
So you draw a blank at Michael Clarke? Never heard of him? Never heard the two words stuck together?
Oh, the one that hangs out with Lara Bingle?
Yes.
Bang. See, I know sport.
So how long since you had to read women's magazines? Because that is where you would have caught that one. that breeze was blowing.
When I'm on a commercial radio gig, it is compulsory, as you know, to read women's mags. It's the foundation, the very foundation of the industry is what's in the NW this week. What important issues.
So what have you got on Bingle? The entire Tony Bingle. Martin Bingle file?
On Lara Bingle?
Yeah.
No, I don't know anything about it. That was between gigs for me, that whole affair.
But you do sort of know that happened. So I'm interested to know that. We're at the number two cricketer in the country, and you've heard of him. So that's you're going quite well.
Ricky Ponting, because I always wonder with people who are Richard, I've worked with a few Richards, what is their attitude to it being shortened to Dick?
There aren't many that go with it. Dick Smith stuck with it.
Dick Smith. Well, I think Dick Ponting, that's got a great sound to it. Dick Ponting. That's fantastic. Isn't that a great name?
He tried to get rid of Ricky. He doesn't like Ricky much.
Oh, right.
He wanted to become Rick Ponting.
Richard Ponting, perhaps.
I'm not sure he's Richard. I think he might be Ricky.
Right.
In the great Launceston tradition of plucking a name that really no one else in the country was using. Dick. Ricky, I think he's Ricky, straight out and out Ricky, and he doesn't like it and wants to go back to Rick.
Dick Ponting is a fantastic name. I love it when a person's name exactly suits their job. Like occasionally on TV you'll see an interview with theatre director Aubrey Mellor. So you couldn't make up a better name for a theatre director. Aubrey Mellor. Sounds like a very rich dark chocolate.
That's true.
Is this going to be a fun? Who sounds like this?
What
job?
About? I think that the kind of alternative novelist who's who wrote the one with the different colours? Miranda.
Miranda July.
Yes, Miranda July.
She
sounds like a kooky novelist.
It does sound like a kooky novelist. What was because it was one of those novels where the name is entirely in lowercase. It was short stories, actually. I think.
Yeah, that's right.
She made that film, You and Me and Everyone We Know.
Exactly.
Hey, that leads us into what was going to be one of our topics.
What was that?
Best movies of the decade. Not so much. We don't want to hear what they were, but just it's interesting to me now that we're getting to the end of the decade and those lists are starting to appear. And I have to say, people are struggling.
You think it's been a barren decade?
I don't want to suggest that because there have been great films, but it's hard to find a film where you go, that's good enough to be...
The Godfather.
The Godfather of the decade. And the one I was writing about on the internet last week was the Times of London.
They've done their list.
100 best films of the decade. They went at number one with Hidden, sometimes known as Cache.
And it's quite an acclaimed film, but you're not a huge fan.
I think
it's the 193rd best film of the decade.
It's another film by Michael Haneke where he just tells us, hey, movies aren't real. He'd be the kind of man who'd show up on the set of An American in Paris and go, that's not realistic. That's not what an artist living in Paris would look like or how he would behave.
You think he's leached some of the fun from the industry?
It's like, remember Peter Greenaway in the 80s? He was constantly telling you how audiences are fools and
people don't smear shit over each other either. Greenaway,
but he was like, Greenaway was... highly intellectual, and yet his films were full of gimmickry.
Yeah.
Almost William Castle-level gimmickry. Like, there was one called Drowning by Numbers, where all the numbers were hidden in the film somewhere. Go, oh, look, there's the number 26. It was basically just an intellectual version of 3D.
Exactly.
But I don't know, Michael. So there'll be a lot of people love Michael Haneke, but to me, it's really, of the entire decade... Hidden is as good as we can do. At number two on the Times' list was a tie between the last two Bourne Identity films.
No, they are. But
really? The best? That they are the second best film of the decade?
I find them too hard to follow.
I think the first one was better than the second two anyway.
Yeah. Were they this decade? Mm-hmm. Was the first one this decade as well?
I think it was. Oh, that's interesting. I think it was all this decade.
So they've basically excluded the first Bourne film. This is interesting that they've gone with the sequel and the double sequel. What's that called?
The Ultimatum and the Supremacy. Oh,
they've ignored the initial and put in the two and three as the
first films. People love Paul Greengrass, who sort of did that film. Was it Black Sunday?
Okay.
He's sort of look, he's made it look like a documentary by wobbling the camera a lot.
So you, when you see any film, right, you've got a star system and stars. So of that Times list, were there any of your
It's full of great films.
So what would be one of your five-star movies of the decade? Was there one?
Five-star? Did I even get one that was five-star? I'm not sure. That Eternal Sunshine, that was quite good.
I would have rated that as the number one film of the decade.
Yeah. But I'm one of these snooty types who feels that television has outshone the movies.
So that's sort of that's like saying, "What's your favourite colour?" Three, you know, you can't actually answer from outside the parameters of the question.
No. Well, I don't know. It's just I liked a lot of films, but were they great films? The Station Agent, the best film ever about a dwarf who inherits a railway station. I mean, I thought that was a great film, but is it? A great, capital G, great film? Is it up there with La Ventura? I don't know that it is.
May not be.
It was a decade of very great small films.
People love your recommendations, though. So can you, over the course of the next track, write down...
some movies.
If you could write down five films from the decade that should have been in the top 20.
I think pretty much all the really good ones were in there. There's a lot of supposedly great films that I haven't yet to see. I'm told Gomorrah is a great film. I'm told The Class is a great film. They're on the list. I haven't seen those two yet. But, you know, Casino Royale was at number 8 for the decade.
Seems...
wrong.
Wrong, yeah.
The Devil Wears Prada was at number 100 of the top 100.
That's
really
terrible.
That's wrong. Wedding Crashers came in at number 80. For God's sake.
Was Swingers this decade? No.
No, that was about 96, I think.
I can't even remember if I've put a song on.
We're definitely back on the R's.
Yeah, absolutely.
You did, because you said it was linked to a film. It's The Arcade Fire. What is it?
Oh, yeah.
What's the link to a film?
It is Where the Wild Things Are.
Oh, yes. We've got to talk about that.
Is coming out, I think, on the 3rd or the 4th of December. So we're up to the 1st of December.
And this is the song that they play in the trailer?
Yeah, it's called Wake Up. Yes, Julia Zemiro there in Spontaneous Broadway.
Yes, Russell Fletcher, I think I recognised.
Yeah. Did you see the front of the Age Melbourne magazine? Julia had the... big cheekbones out.
Oh, right.
I mean, she does have nice cheekbones, but wow. That was, I reckon she looked about 20 years old, Julia. That's a photo to clip.
Somebody just gave me that magazine because I didn't realise. Well, I think we were both in there writing about aspects of Melbourne.
Well, she was setting the topic with an I Love Melbourne t-shirt on the front cover, and we did 300 odd words.
What was your... I think you mentioned Handsome Steve's, didn't you?
I did. Yeah,
he was very happy about it. I saw Handsome Steve the other day. He's very happy about that.
Yeah, I talked about the birds on the ride down to the Merry Creek because I try to think of the highlights in my life, and, of course, I'm obsessed. I'll leave aside family at this point. They're all great. Well done to the family.
Sure.
But I thought I'd pick the other good thing in my life, and that is... riding 12 minutes to the Abbotsford Convent and seeing birds play at the side of the bike path each day.
I see, that's beautiful. I went with a less evocative image playing the Swagman in the late 80s.
You did?
Would you even know what the...
I know the Swagman, the smorgasbord we're famous for.
That's right, or the Suspicious Blaze that we're famous for, as it was retitled.
Obviously you're willing to just hit big home run balls out of the ballpark in terms of defamation here. That was established, was it?
Well, it's interesting. If you go to the Wikipedia page, the whole was it arson or was it not issue is covered in some detail. I was surprised to find that the Swagman had its own Wikipedia page.
Because that means that someone, because it went down in late 80s, 86 or something?
Early 90s, I think. And it was, but it was, I think, possibly the largest.
And when did Al Gore invent the internet? It was late 90s.
Wasn't the internet invented in the late 60s?
Maybe.
This when there was just Alta Vista.
I remember the first word that was sent was log. They tried to send log on.
All right.
And they only got
that
half.
That was considered too ambitious. They didn't have the gigabyte.
They had the first crash at log.
Really?
So, yeah. And then they said, this program is not responding. End now was the rest of it. But anyway, you were saying that the Swagman has its own Wikipedia page.
It does. And because I didn't realise, I think it may have been of historically significant enormity to be, you know, notable. I think it was like... I think 1,200 seats. Is that for a restaurant a lot?
That is a huge restaurant.
I thought so. We did our breakfast show from the Swagman one morning, and I always remember the dressing room we were given had a handwritten sign saying reserved for Bucks Fizz on it. And then later it's burnt to the ground in, if you can imagine me putting quote marks around this, mysterious circumstances. And
the insurance company were interested enough to take the matter to court, I believe.
That's right. I think it was settled out of court. But it was shortly after the same thing happened to the Eltham Barrel. Do you remember the Eltham Barrel?
No.
The Eltham, a suburb that was always very concerned about whether things blend in with the local community. In the late 80s, I recall, was a long battle with McDonald's. You know, we don't want a McDonald's in, it doesn't blend in with
sort
the environment.
Like
we're quite happy with an enormous barrel, though. That fits in. It was a restaurant
Shaped like a barrel.
Shaped like a giant barrel. It was about 10 stories high, I think. I think so, Al-Qaeda may have targeted it at one point.
Did it just, like, when all the
was
drinks...
Was there a tap?
The drinks that spilled at the end of the night, they just tapped off
you
at the end of the...
back your car up and tap up. But that was, yeah, I think that may have burned. There was just the husk, just the burnt husk of a smoking barrel was all that was left.
Before we talked Age Melbourne yep. magazine and Julia Zemiro, we had a track which was Wake Up by the Arcade Fire. That came out of a chat about movies, the best movies of the decade. I put Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind at number one, only because I love to commit and to excite, because right. it'll get some people angry. And Fee and I used to have a debate on Breakfasters, because she'll never give you her top five anything.
Oh, really?
Because she doesn't believe in it. She thinks it dirties the whole principle of liking things the most.
Well, that's fair enough. But, I mean, you know, they do float to the top in your mind. I haven't actually been through the paperwork for the decade in enough detail, but I will say that there would be quite a few Pixar films on that list. The Incredibles.
Yeah, great film.
That one called Up. That one called Ratatouille, that looked like it was going to be terrible and turned out to be great.
Because they're the last ones that still get screenplays that are written by screenwriters as opposed to special effects people.
Everything that Steven Spielberg seems to have forgotten going by his last few films has been picked up by that bloke Brad Bird. He seems... I'm guessing you see these Pixar films over and over with your children, so you don't...
Not yet. Monsters, I will soon.
Monsters, Inc. would have worn out its welcome at your place.
We've got Monsters. It's actually the only one we've got, but I'm actually looking forward to the push into Pixar, which is coming, I think, this year. She's two now, so she's not quite right. up to Pixar. But we're ready to go. It's going to be a great era, because as much as I love Jay from Play School, I think he was in Star Wars. You know him from...
Jay LaGuire?
Yeah.
Well, you're thinking of Temuera Morrison, aren't you?
I think Jay may have had a smaller part.
Oh, really? Possibly, because they were kind of a duo in Auckland.
Really?
They were like a
rat pack.
A sort of a mini rat pack in the late 80s, Jay LaGuire.
A rat pack.
A rat pack in New Zealand. And I think I've told this story a million times, but is that wrong to do that again?
It depends whether... If people who are listening to you for the millionth time might just be about to slap their forehead. But
sorry.
For other people...
Well, I always remember having Jay LaGuire on our radio show in the mid-90s, and him and Temuera Morrison had a kind of rivalry post-Rat Pack. And Temuera had done Once Were Warriors, of course, and that had sent him off to Hollywood. And Jay LaGuire came in on our show, and he was really depressed, and he goes, "Oh, Temuera's just signed up for what are going to be the three biggest movies of the year." And you know what they were? That was Speed 2.
Yeah.
It was The Island of Dr. Moreau, admittedly with Marlon Brando.
Yeah, he would have been confident there.
And Barbed Wire with Pamela Anderson.
So do you think Jay felt better or worse for his friend having that crash? I guess that's a psychological question for Jay and not you.
Yeah, that's right. We'll throw to the callers. Don't know. We have to come back to Where the Wild Things Are. There's more to say about that.
We do, but we've got a track.
We have, because we were talking about Glen Campbell, and I don't think we were being sort of derogatory. I was just saying that when I was a kid, I had my fill of Rhinestone Cowboy on the AM radio, but Mick James came running in brandishing this album.
He's back.
In which, which is called Meet Glen Campbell, in which he does a lot of covers. He does a cover of A Replacements song. Sorry, not Replacement. That was just Westerberg on his own. The Replacement. The Matt. Sadly Beautiful by Glen Campbell. Let's hear it now.
You are on Triple R with the Two Tones. We're filling in on Banana Lounge Broadcasting this Tuesday. Dave Graney off supporting Glen Campbell, apparently. Yes. He's on an Australia tour. And Elizabeth McCarthy missing as well this week. So Tony Martin and myself, Tony Wilson, filling in.
That's right. And we were just referring quite a while back to Where the Wild Things Are. We heard the song from the trailer. I noticed the new trailer has dropped the word hope from it, because I always think that's a curse when a film promises hope.
In a land of hope.
That's right. The postman, Kevin Costner, he was arrived promising hope. It's always a bad sign. I think it's a desperate marketing exercise. What can we promise with this?
And postman, honestly, Hope's not enough. You want certainty with the postman. Like, not, I hope the postman will come.
It was 3 hours. People were just hoping that it would end. And hoping, and they were disappointed to discover that he sang the song under the end credits, Kevin Costner. Nobody got that far, though. So,
do you know that they have introduced a new station on... I've got pay TV at the moment.
Oh, yep.
Because I can write it off as a tax deduction with my soccer interests.
Of course.
Yeah. Yep. So the percentage of pay TV that is soccer, I can write off as a tax deduction according to H&R Block. They have a new station that is just, it blocks itself according to stars. It's called StarPick 1 and StarPick 2. So they'll run Kevin Costner films for 4 hours or six hours.
A nightmare.
Well, I saw I saw Bull Durham again.
That was okay.
That is a fantastic film.
Yeah.
I think it's the best ever sports film.
He had three good ones and he had No Way Out.
That's good, isn't it?
And The Untouchables.
That's okay.
And Bull Durham. But I worry what they would look like now. They felt good in the 80s.
Bull Durham's fantastic.
Right.
I thought it was the greatest statement of the not quite talented enough second-rate sportsman that's ever been written, other than Nick Hornby's Fever Pitch.
Right.
Has a piece about the Gus Caesar story that, that I love as a piece of sports writing. It examines the career of a guy who must have thought he was going to be a champion. He goes through, you know, under 15 England playing centre back, and he keeps going up and up and up, and he doesn't just get picked up by Aston Villa, he gets picked up by Arsenal, and he's the best player in the reserve team, and he plays under 23 for England. And Nick Hornby builds up this sort of sense of, why wouldn't Gus Caesar think that things are going to work out all right? And then he gets to the very top, and he's a fool. His own fans boo him because he's so far below the level required. And so Nick Hornby develops this thesis about sport being a place where you get found out. Like, you don't get found out in literature. If I write a novel that's truly awful, there'll still be someone.
There'll still be some good reviews.
There'll still be someone who will like my truly awful novel, even if most people think it's awful. And so there's a sense of what's the subjectivity? Whereas the 100 meters final, if you are just 7 seconds slower than the guy who wins, you're only a third of the way down the track, limping along.
It was like that. Didn't you find that at school though? Because people who are good at maths, you could get 99%.
Yeah.
You could never get 100% in English.
No,
it was basically just up to the reviewers.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, but the. So, well, I don't know how I got onto this, but it was about sport. Oh, yeah, the best sport film. I think Bull Durham is the best sport film.
Now, Fever Pitch, that's true, isn't it? That's a memoir.
Yeah, that's a non-fiction.
But there was a movie of it with Mr. Darcy.
Yeah.
And then there was an American movie of it.
And they said it in baseball.
With Jimmy Fallon and Drew Barrymore. And it was, I think it might have been called Fever Pitch here in America, and then did it have another name for Australia, like some like Playing for Love or something like that?
I can't remember.
Sure, they might have done that.
They may have done that. The English one's not a bad film. It's okay,
right?
It's not as the book itself talks about, you know, Hillsborough and soccer violence, and a lot of them are funny stories, but there's one story in it where he doesn't go. He has to choose between, you know, watching Arsenal or his relationship, and they've taken that story about the biggest game Arsenal ever played in and the impact it has on when he should be with his partner, and that becomes the format of the film, the Mr. Darcy film.
Mentioning Mr. Darcy, I mean, it's one of my pet peeves is just how many books there are about Mr. Darcy that aren't written by Jane Austen. If you go to the bookshop, I swear to you, there's one called Mr. Darcy Takes a Wife. There's something called the Mr. Darcy Diaries, where someone's just gone through the book and gone and turned it into diary form. Then yesterday, I see what surely must be the ultimate one. Mr. Darcy, vampire. I'm not making this up. Now you've got the best of both worlds.
It is a new type. There's a lot of these books of rewriting classics in modern day form. The best of which is The Princess and the Packet of Frozen Peas.
Oh, isn't that a fantastic one? And Tony Wilson, I understand you may have a new novel coming out in the new year.
I've been announcing it for a year.
Yeah.
But I haven't had a publisher for most of that year. But I now do have a publisher.
Right.
So
bang, it's a good book. I've read it. I like it.
Yeah. So in it's been that's like I say. There's a, with literature, it's a subjective field, and my previous publisher made a subjective judgment on it.
Of an early version, I should
of an early
out.
Version. But there's been some people subsequently who have decided that it's great and let's push on
let's
into 2011.
It is sports related.
Yeah, it's a sex scandal book. It compiles all the sex scandals that have happened into one massive orgy in Chapter 11 and looks at the way that the tabloids feast on a sex scandal. For example, the Tiger Woods scenario over the last few days. One, that was a great one when the story broke.
See, I find out who sports people are when they're involved in a sex scandal. I take an interest.
This is all a bit of allegedly on the Tiger front. But yeah. when that one broke, 3 a.m. or something on the internet, it was saying Tiger Woods has been involved in a car accident where his car that was travelling at 30 kilometres per hour smashed into a tree.
Yeah.
And he was seriously injured with facial lacerations and almost unconscious. And his wife freed him from the car with a golf club.
And was found standing over his body, wielding a golf club.
Said 7-iron.
For safety reasons.
And you just read that initial report and went, oh, this one's going to
have
more to it.
Did you see the wreckage of the car?
No.
Because it hit a tree. I mean, as you say, it's going 30. It's hit a fire. He's got a fire hydrant on his property. That's when you know you're big time. You've got your own hydrant. Like the one from the main street of Hazard County that people are driving into every week. And so, bang, he's hit a fire hydrant. Bang, he's hit a tree. But why couldn't the wife have just opened the door? Why did she need to smash in the back window with a golf club?
Well, maybe the door was broken.
Really? All the doors were...
All four doors.
The most effective way to get in was to smash the back window with a golf club.
Maybe that's how the Woods now get into their houses and cars, that they are so rich.
They're so golfing themed.
That they just go, we could go through the door, but what about the living room today?
Yeah, the living room. I think that's a 12-iron.
They
the
smash
room.
The window and then just call a glacier and say, we came in through the living room today.
But has it happened on his property? Is that what is... Like, what's the deal? He doesn't have to comment. Although the papers seem to feel he does have to comment.
The police want him to comment, don't they?
Right. But he doesn't have to.
But he has no... There's no allegation of alcohol involved, which seems weird because of the fact that he's hit a tree and a hydrant in his own street. Like, you tend to know where they are in your own street, the trees and the hydrants.
And this has all happened because... He
enjoyed Melbourne so much.
He enjoyed Melbourne so much, and there was a woman who he's been seen with in America...
Yeah.
Who, on the night he was staying in Melbourne, happened to be in Melbourne, staying at the same hotel on the same floor.
Was that the case?
That's the case. But it was a total coincidence, and they didn't even know that each other were there. I don't know.
That's the release on Tiger Woods' website says that.
Yeah.
And...
Okay, I'm not sort of drawing any conclusions, but it is an odd coincidence.
It does look, and that might be what he might have been telling that coincidence to his wife.
Yeah,
and
she wanted him to
explain it again and again.
Right,
and they ended up
putting
the punctuation in with 7-irons.
To the point where he had to be freed from his barely damaged car via the rear windscreen.
Yeah.
Angus Sampson, we've just. Did we mention Angus? Because we're talking about where the wild things are, and I don't want to insult Angus, and he's a friend of ours, but something odd has happened in that for years we've been told that Angus Sampson is in where the wild things are.
Well, I know that Spike Jones started listening to this radio station because Angus put him onto it.
And Angus has been dining out on Spike Jones stories for years, but... Someone pointed out to me that if you go to the IMDb page for Angus Sampson, Where the Wild Things no longer appears on his list of credits.
Because the job he had on Where the Wild Things Are was to traipse out into the Victorian bush.
Playing one of the monsters.
I think he was the cow with the, you know, like the horns that come up. There's three main monsters.
I think his voice is now done by Forrest Whitaker.
Right.
So
yeah.
you It's not Angus's head.
No, it's a big
monster
suit.
Head. It's not Angus's voice.
No.
So, ergo, it's just Angus walking around.
But that's still a credit, isn't
Surely
it?
Surely a thank like, you. Surely you still get a thank you.
The caterer gets into the credits. Everyone gets into the credits, don't they?
Well, he's because
I assistant
think...
to Mr. Jones gets into this to the credits.
See, I went and had a look on the IMDb page for Where the Wild Things Are, and it looks like, you know, eventually at some point, it all gets reined in by the film company who mirror the actual credits of the film on the site. So if Angus's name isn't there, presumably it's not even in the credits anywhere. That feels harsh,
possible,
unnecessary and cruel.
Is it possible his monster got cut out?
But that's not possible because I've seen the horns one and Forrest Whitaker's voice is in the trailer. So I'm assuming it's a case of like Michael Veitch in Takeaway where he was in the Barry Berge costume.
Really?
Until the head came off and then it was Peter Rosethorn.
Because Veitch was double booked.
He's double booked, so he only got to shoot the scenes where he was in the costume.
And how do they handle that on IMDb? Does Veitch get Takeaway or he doesn't?
I think he's in there for a voice. He also did a voiceover, but he's not credited as the body of Barry Berge. I mean, I'm sure he was. Obviously, his agent would have been
it's
you know,
one for
furious.
Veitch. It's one for Veitch to take up now, isn't it? Because there's an IMDb police. Veitch is now between books, between his aviation war books. I think this is something he can do in the next fortnight, is to right that wrong.
But hang on, but what about Guzzy?
That is a bigger wrong.
That is a big wrong. How can we cheer up Angus Sampson? I know. Let's play a track that I know for a fact he enjoys. And it's from The Bedroom Philosopher, our very own Justin Hazelwood here at Triple R, host of Lime Champions, Monday nights, 7 till 8. This is, for Angus Sampson, Jesus on Big Brother.
That's the Shout Out Louds from the album Howl Howl Gaff Gaff and the track The Comeback. And before that, we heard from an Angus Sampson favourite from The Bedroom Philosopher.
Yes, that was Jesus on Big Brother from the album Brown and Orange. And I should mention that the philosopher has a residency at the Toff in town, throughout the month of December with the Orquidstra. Definitely get along and see that. What are we talking about now, Dave?
Oh, we were talking about, I told you the other day that I'd seen Denise Drysdale on a television commercial.
Right.
And it was, they said what she was promoting had won two AFIs.
Oh, really? It was like a film or a TV show?
No, and you could see the big smile across Denise's face because right. She also realised that most of us would think an AFI was an Australian Film Institute Award.
But
it was actually the Australian Furniture Industry Awards.
Oh, wow.
And it was a particular form of couch that had won a couple of AFIs.
So they have an awards show for Australian... Imagine the pressure on the chairs
and,
on that night.
And imagine, like, I work as an MC occasionally. Mm. Imagine just thinking you've picked up the AFI's job, and then it turns out you're awarding Shays of the Year.
And you're struggling to think of any furniture jokes
exactly
to weave in. What was the last one you did? You told me one.
Last furniture joke?
No, like, hang on a second. I think, who did that? Oh, no, Wayne Hope. I saw Wayne Hope, and he was hosting the Cinematographers Awards.
It's amazing what's out there.
Yeah,
once you start emceeing, you'll never stop. I've done the Pharmacy Industry Awards.
Right.
I did the Law Institute of Victoria Law Awards. I've done lots of...
Do they go off, any of this?
They go off, and I hope we never get any double up because I use the exact same awards show format for my opening patter.
Do you sing a song? Do you come out and do a Billy Crystal medley about furniture?
I do have songs in my repertoire if booked as a speaker.
Really?
I sing The Long and Winding Baz to accountants if I
really?
If I'm asked.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I also if I sing to lawyers, lawyers often get Killing Me Softly with contracts.
Yeah. Wow. I'm impressed. This is because Wayne Hope was...
He doesn't have any songs.
I was trying to give him advice for the Cinematographers Awards. I'm doing lots of frame aspect ratio jokes. They'll eat that shit up. And also a few gags about focus pullers falling asleep on the job. The cinematographers love that. Anything about clapper loaders?
You know, there's a Tony Wilson who'll be at those awards.
Right.
He's a famous cameraman, one of the best Australia's ever produced.
Really? Tony Wilson?
Yeah, he was the, maybe not a cinematographer so much as a television cameraman.
Oh, okay.
But he did This Fabulous Century for Peter Luck in 1979. How do I know that? Because as an eight-year-old, huge thrill to get to the end credits
right.
and see camera Tony Wilson.
Right. Now, we've talked about this many times about people whose names we share. We don't have to go through the Tony Martins. But Tony Wilson, there's another one. There's a book in the shops about Chappelle Corby.
Yeah.
That's by do people think that's you?
Not yet.
No.
I think he's right out there as her biggest defender sort of thing.
Right.
So he's very pro-Chappelle, whereas I guess I'm indifferent to the whole thing.
Now, there's also there's a book out at the moment. I haven't read it. Someone was telling me they've read Hotel Kerabogan. So, hey, so I always just say Kerabogan Prison. If you want to contact Chappelle Corby, write to her, Kerabogan Prison. But it's Hotel Kerabogan, and it talks about the elaborate sort of I'm trying to think of a tasteful way of putting it. Renee Lawrence, let's just say.
That she's living it up there?
Let's just say she's got a double bed in her cell. They had like a four-poster, apparently. And she's just on with everybody. Bang. Let's take a number. I don't know. Hotel Kerabogan, that's out there. But we're talking about things that have the same names as other things. Is that what we're doing?
Well, yeah, because the Australian furniture industry.
The AFI Awards, we've got Tony Wilson.
They could be mucked up. They could be confused with the real AFIs. And then I said to you, you asked me what I was reading. We often swap notes on what we're reading.
Yeah.
And I said I was reading Surrender by Sonia Hartnett.
Mm.
And I said, and you said, oh, I've read one Sonia Hartnett. Of a boy. Don't get it mixed up with About a Boy.
I hate to think that someone would go looking for Nick Hornby's About a Boy and get Of a Boy. Not because it's not a good book, but let's just say it doesn't have a happy ending.
Mm.
Mm. If the kid in the Hugh Grant movie had suffered the same fate as the kid in Of a Boy, that would have been a very disturbing film.
Well, Sonia, one of our most celebrated writers, gosh, this book that I just finished.
I've read that one too, Surrender. Yeah, man.
Block your ears if you're planning to read this. But I could not believe the catalogue of misery in that book. It goes arson,
yeah.
Unpopular kid,
yeah.
Invents friend to have a friend, so invents mirror image of self.
Yeah.
Mirror image of self is bad.
Yeah.
Gets dog, one friend in world.
Yeah.
Dog forced to shoot dog by mean dad.
Yeah.
Kills parents.
Yeah. We did say spoilers ahoy at the top, didn't we? Yes.
Yeah. And himself wants to kill himself in order to get rid of bad him.
Yeah, I don't think there will be a film of Surrender. It possibly should be, but I don't think...
It's well written. Yeah. It's beautiful. I wish I could find metaphors and similes and descriptive prose of the quality that Sonia can.
Hmm.
But honestly, like that was... That's 10 of the... Of the grimmest things you could smash into 200 pages.
Yeah, there's a custard pie fight, isn't there? At one point, I'm sure there is. No,
and so about a boy
of its, a boy. That's not exactly the same name.
So there, it's a much brighter thing about a boy.
But things movies often have the same name, and people don't seem bothered. Twilight, of course, massive hit. But there was a film called Twilight only about 10 years ago with, I think it was a Robert Benton film with Paul Newman, one of his last performances, and Gene Hackman. And as a friend of mine said, isn't that the one where Reese Witherspoon gets them out? Yes, it is, if you're following at home. But, yeah, it was obviously decided that Twilight didn't do very well, so bugger it. Does anyone mind if we... just call another film Twilight. And there's another. There's a really interesting version of this happening this year. If you've been to the movies and seen a kids' film, you may have seen the shorts for a film called Nine. Have you seen the shorts for that?
No.
It's a computer animated ragdolls coming to life and fighting monsters sort of movie called Nine. It's coming out.
For kids.
It's called Nine. There's no way it's not going to be called Nine when it comes out. But the Weinstein brothers, a couple of years back, shot a movie of the musical Nine. Remember the musical Nine?
No.
I think it might be a musical version of 8 and a Half, but it was done here with John Deirdrick from Bluey years ago. But there's a movie of it with Daniel Day-Lewis. It's a big budget musical with heaps of famous actresses all dancing around Daniel Day-Lewis, and it's from the guy who made Chicago, Rob Marshall. Now, 9 is a famous stage musical. If it's the movie of that, it's going to have to be called 9. And they've been sitting on that for – it's been on the shelf for a couple of years, this musical. So there's going to be a battle. Like, who's going to blink? They're both going to come out, and they're both going to be called 9, and there's going to be confusion. Is there not?
Absolutely. Players. There was another book called Players.
Really?
And I just soldiered on, thinking different genre. Because it was written by one of the great writers of the 20th century. Who's the one who wrote the very big book with baseball for the first 120 pages?
Dom DeLillo. Oh, yeah, he did do Players.
He wrote a book called Players.
Right.
And they said to me, you know, there's a book called Players.
Right.
And I said, 1972, not one of Dom's big ones.
No, it wasn't big for Dom. Dom DeLuise did better in that year than Dom DeLillo. But I didn't get that with A Nest of Occasionals. There was no suggestion.
Hasn't there been anyone that's built a piece of art around that particular furniture structure?
I'm sure there probably is. But hang on, we're looking for people to call in.
Yes, people want to call in with confusions. That, for example, you might have asked for something from your parents for Christmas as a kid,
right?
And they've just got you the other one.
Right.
Like Twilight, you mentioned that one with an old movie. Azara Beatty, a Melbourne novelist, he called his novel Twilight after the Stephanie Meyer series.
Really? Just didn't care?
Written. No, he just said, I've written a literary fiction about a Pakistani matriarch and her life in Pakistan, and that's not going to cross over with buff werewolves naked from the top up.
All right, so what's the number people call on?
9388 1027. We want potential confusions in title. Titular confusions.
Call us in with your titular confusions. And in the meantime, you've selected a track I think we flagged earlier.
Yeah, because Tony Abbott has won, I presume everyone knows that by now, 42-41 in the leadership struggle this morning against Malcolm Turnbull, we thought we would play a song that Casey Bonetto wrote for the Breakfasters a couple of years ago in the lead-up to the 2007 election. Do we all remember when the Mad Monk called Bernie Banton? He said he basically questioned his motives. He was having a go at him about something. I think it was questioning how genuine his motives were at some point. And it ended up, he used the expression that that's bullshit.
Right.
And that ends up being the name of this track, Dag Nabbit, That's Bullshit. Let's listen to that now. Thank you for those messages. Before that, we heard a track from Casey Bonetto. Already played him in the previous hour, but then we thought because Abbott has won the Liberal leadership, we needed to play Dag Nabbit, That's Bullshit. And so a second Casey Bonetto song in the same show. You're on Banana Lounge Broadcasting. No Dave Graney this week and no Elizabeth McCarthy. The Two Tones filling in tone, and we're collecting titular confusions.
Have we got any titular confusions on the line?
We have indeed. I think we are speaking to Richard. Is that right? Hello, Richard? Hello?
Hello there.
How are you?
What's your confusion, Richard?
The AFC.
The Australian Film Commission?
That's correct. And if you go online, it's also the Adelaide Football Club.
Oh, right.
And has there been any...
Who's doing the best?
Yeah, well, sometimes when you go and look for funding...
you hope Mark Ricciuto will provide it?
The AFC website, yeah, there seems to be a bit more money in football than film.
Well, yeah, if Mark Ricciuto did provide the funding, there'd be lots of films about fishing and getting tats and drinking six-packs, which is not necessarily a bad thing. Thanks for your contribution, Richard. John, are you there?
Boys.
Hello.
I'm not sure if this is titular, but my uncle up in Queensland, when the whole cafe culture came in, spent 2 years walking around asking for a Robert De Niro.
A Robert Nero?
Robert De Niro instead of a cappuccino, an Al Pacino.
Right. I've heard of cappuccino. So, is it meant to be a rhyming slang for cappuccino?
Well, I think he tried to remember it, but he just took down the wrong actor.
Great. I'll have a Robert De Niro, thanks.
Thank you.
Somebody produced a gun from their sleeve and shot him in the face.
Now, I think Berkey, a regular caller, is there, Berkey? Hello?
That was a pistol, lad. Well, very funny.
Have you got a titular confusion for us, Berkey?
Well, I did have one. My son was very concerned about wrestlers fighting against pandas on the WWF thing.
Right.
World Wildlife Federation. No.
Okay.
I've gone out one night, had a bit too much to drink, and ended up in the morning with a hangover and a cricket bat signed by John Blackman, which I thought was Don Bradman.
But hang on, the pandas is a great idea. Perhaps the WWF and the WWF could team up with an all-panda costume wrestling spectacular that would draw attention to both codes.
That's true. A cage fight involving a large killer animal would really answer a few questions about how legit those wrestlers are. Thank you, Berkey, for your contribution. We may have another caller. It'll be a bit of a stab in the dark this time, but hello.
Hello, how are you going?
Good. Who's this?
Nick.
How are you, Mitch?
Good. I had a friend who asked her father for a Michael Jackson CD for Christmas, and he ended up getting her a Michael Bolton CD.
Oh, dear.
Was a bit of a tragedy.
That's a long way away. It's a bad mistake.
It is.
And I've got to say, embarrassingly, I went to De La Salle College, which our tracksuit had a big DLS across the back, and a kid stopped me on the way home once and wanted my autograph because he thought I worked on the Don Lane show.
The Don Lane show.
Because that was really part of the vernacular, wasn't it?
Absolutely.
What, did you watch the DLS last week?
Beautiful. Well, they're great titular confusions. I've just realised mentioning typing in AFC into the internet. One that happens is, you know, The Punch, that website, that it's kind of Rupert Murdoch's attempt to do Crikey, basically, isn't it?
I think so. It's very, someone said to me that it's quite Sydney centric.
Right. No one gets paid. All of the journalists who write for Murdoch's publications apparently are forced to, for free, write articles, opinion pieces for this website, The Punch, which bills itself as Australia's favourite conversation. And I tried to find it on Google, and I think this might have been changed now, but for the first couple of months when you typed in The Punch, what you got was a website from Nigeria called The Punch, and you go there and it says Nigeria's finest news source, The Punch, and the graphics are quite dodgy. And of course, no reflection on the people of Nigeria, but now we really do associate the country of Nigeria with internet scams, let's be honest.
Yeah.
You say Nigeria to someone, they're thinking about that email I just got telling them that they're a member of the royal family all of a sudden.
Yeah.
So I don't know whether Murdoch was able to, because he doesn't have a very good relationship with Google, as you know. But I don't know whether he was able to adjust it so that the ranking... Well, but I wonder how many people looking for Australia's favourite conversation have ended up on this Nigerian website and assumed the whole thing's a scam.
It'll be... well, it seems possible. And it's another hit that Rupert's taken. Do you know, it's interesting. How does Rupert tolerate Andrew Bolt? I find... Because Rupert's not a climate change denier. No.
Well, it was for years, but I think Bolt sort of... He lost a bit of spring in his step when Murdoch finally came out and said... Oh, yeah, okay, climate change is real. Now, having kept it out of his newspapers for years, I remember when the Kyoto conference was on, front page of The Age, not even mentioned in the Herald Sun. So there was obviously a, don't mention it, it's not happening. And then all of a sudden, overnight, Murdoch's gone, oh, there's money to be made in climate change support, so bang, I'm for it now. It is real, I've decided. And Bolt just, the whole wind went out of his sails for a while there. Obviously, you know, he's got racism to fall back on. But it was an interesting kind of time, wasn't it?
And the insiders give him a run as well, which I find really odd. I think he's on about every 4 weeks. And I think he should be on to the ratio of how many scientists support his position. So he should be on about every 905th week.
Right. Good point. The word bullshit was mentioned in the last song. And it's always been... I've always had a theory that it was Bob Hawke who made the word bullshit acceptable in the media. Because I remember in the 80s, you could be fired for saying the word bullshit on radio. And then almost overnight it became acceptable. It was because Bob Hawke on the 6 o'clock news, somebody asked him something. He went, ah, it's bullshit. And bang, overnight, suddenly everyone was saying it. So do you want to keep that theme going?
What's banned now?
Oh, well.
F.
F and C are still out. I don't know.
What about arsehole? Is that allowed to be said on Triple M?
That's, I think, acceptable now. You, obviously, it helps if the group program director's walked in. It'll just come out spontaneously. but, yeah, I think it's all about context, isn't it, really? Somebody said it in the news.
Yeah.
The word bastard. Once the Democrats started
using Keep the Bastards on.
Once they put that in an ad, suddenly it was fine for kiddies to say it.
I'm reading This Boy's Life by Tobias Wolff, a recommendation from you, Tony Martin.
If you've seen the movie, don't be put off. The book is an absolute corker.
And there's a scene in that where a kid goes absolutely bananas in a, slamming a head into the footpath type way for being called a sissy.
Oh, I remember at school.
Sissy wouldn't bite nowadays, would it?
No, I wouldn't have thought so. Not since Beck released Sissy Neck. It was fashionable to be a sissy. But keeping with the bullshit theme, I thought we could play some more local music. A track from one of the finest albums of the year, Surface Paradise by Root. This is Everybody Loves You, brackets, Long Time. All right, okay. It wouldn't be the Two Tones without some disastrous technical error. You know what that is? That is track 7 from the bonus disc. I know Springvale listeners will be furious that we've cut off Springy halfway through, but I think really you should put on this disc here I'm throwing to you now. This is the main disc, Surface Paradise. If you buy this album in the right joint, you will find it does come with a bonus disc called First Root, which is early demos by Root, including my favourite Three Cheers for the Boost Juice Lady, which I think we played last time. This is the correct song. This is Everybody Loves You Long Time from Root. It's disastrous.
Who's made these mistakes so far?
I will accept.
Normally it's me who makes all the mistakes because I can't run a panel.
I passed you the wrong CD. And now I've given you the wrong track number. I mean, the graphics are very hard. I don't know what font DC Root has gone with. I think that's Comic Sans. And it's frankly illegible. Please hit us with track 9. Everybody Loves You Long Time. Take 3 from Root. That is not a technical problem. That's actually how that track ends. That's Root. Finally, Everybody Loves You Long Time from Surface Paradise. Tony Martin and Tony Wilson. We've been filling in for Dave Graney and Elizabeth MacArthur.
Our time is up. Tony Martin, check out his website. We talked about the Murdoch Press not paying anyone at their site called... The same goes for Tony Martin. He's put it up as a free enterprise this year, the Scrivener's Fancy.
That's right. No one gets paid whatsoever. It's just all for the fun of it. Updated usually very late on Tuesday night.
The Nest of Occasionals, A Nest of Occasionals, is the best comedy Christmas read you're going to get. In terms of my own promotion, I mentioned earlier on I do MC awards days for things like furniture institutes.
Sure.
I'm always happy to be booked on that. And we'll be back on this show.
We will. We're filling in for Dave and Elizabeth over summer from, I think, the 29th of December here on the Rs.
So we'll look forward to that. Next, though, we have a new show on the grid. We've got Sister Beebe coming up with The Good, The Dub and The Global. She'll be with us in a moment. We've got a couple of promotions we didn't get through in our 2 hours. So we'll play them and then it's over to Sister Beebe.
Bye.